5. In Kaminsky's office, the four of them sat around the desk, smoking, and dully hearing the distant mutter of police guns on their way to the staging area. "To me," Jones said hoarsely, "this is the past. Right now, with you three here in this building, this is a year ago. It's not so much like I can see the future, it's more like I've got one foot stuck in the past. I can't shake it loose. I'm retarded. I'm reliving 1 year of my life forever." He shuddered. "Over and over again, everything I do, everything I say, hear, experience, I have to grind over twice." He raised his voice, sharp and anguished, without hope. "I'm living the same life two times." "In other words," Cusick said slowly, "for you, the future is static. Knowing about it doesn't make it possible for you to change it." Jones laughed icily. "Change it? It's totally fixed. It's more fixed, more permanent than this wall." Furiously, he slammed his open palm against the wall behind him. "You think I've some kind of emancipation? Don't kid yourself. The less you know about the future, the better off you are. You've got a nice illusion. You think you have free will."
"But not you."
"No," Jones agreed bitterly. "I'm trudging along the steps I trudged a year ago. I can't alter a single one of them. This conversation, I know it by heart. Nothing new can come into it. Nothing can be left out."
After a moment, Pearson spoke up. "When I was a kid," he reflected, "I used to go to movies twice. The second time it gave me an advantage over the rest of the audience. I liked it. I could holler out the dialogue a split second before the actors. It gave me a sense of power."
"Sure," Jones agreed. "When I was a kid, I liked it too. But I'm not a kid anymore. I want to live like everybody else. An ordinary life. I didn't ask for this. It wasn't my idea."
"It's a valuable talent," Kaminsky said shrewdly. "As Pearson says, a man who can shout out the dialogue a split second ahead of time has real power. He's a whole notch above the rest of the crowd."
"The thing I remember," Pearson said, "is the contempt I felt for all the rapt faces. The fools, staring, simpering, giggling, being afraid, believing in it, wondering how it would come out, and I knew. It made me disgusted. That's partly why I shouted it out."
Jones didn't comment. Brooding, he sat hunched over in his chair, eyes fixed on the floor.
"How would you like a job?" Kaminsky inquired dryly. "Senior political instructor to the senior political instructor."
"No, thanks."
"You could be a lot of help," Pearson pointed out. "You could aid reconstruction. You could help us unify ourselves and our resources. You could make an important difference."
Jones shot him an exasperated glare. "There's only one issue of importance, this reconstruction." He waved his thin, bony hand impatiently. "You're wasting your time. It's the drifters that matter."
"Why?"
Cusick demanded. "Because there's a whole universe. You spend your time rebuilding this planet. My God, we could have a million planets. New planets, untouched planets. Systems of them, endless resources. And you sit around trying to remelt old scrap. Pack rats, misers, boarding and fingering your miserable pile."
Disgusted, he turned away.
"We're overpopulated, we're undernourished. One more habitable world would solve all that."
"Like Mars?" Cusick inquired softly. "Like Venus? Dead, empty, hostile worlds?"
"I don't mean those."
"What do you mean, then? We've got scouts crawling all around the system. Show us one place we can live."
"Not here."
Angrily, Jones dismissed the solar system.
I mean out there. Centaurus, or Sirius, any of them.
Are they necessarily any better?
Intersystem colonization is possible, Jones answered. Why do you think the Drifters are here? It's obvious. They're settling. They're doing what we should be doing. They're out searching for habitable planets. They may have come millions of light years.
Your answer isn't good enough, Kaminsky pronounced.
It's good enough for me, Jones said.
I know, Kaminsky nodded, troubled. That's what worries me. Curiously, Pearson asked, Do you know anything more about the Drifters who shows up in the next year? Across Jones's face settled a stark, impassioned glaze.
That's why I'm a minister, he said harshly.
The three Secret Servicemen waited, but there was nothing more. Drifters was a key word with Jones. Visibly, the word triggered off something deep and basic inside him, something that made his gaunt face writhe. A core of blazing fervor had floated to the surface.
You don't particularly like them, Cusick observed.
Like them? Jones looked ready to explode. Drifters. Alien life forms coming here, settling on our planets.
His voice rose to a shrill, hysterical screech.
Can't you see what's happening? How long do you think they'll leave us alone? 8 dead worlds, nothing but rock, and Earth, the only useful one. Don't you see? They're preparing to attack us. They're using Mars and Venus as bases. It's Earth thereafter. Who'd want those empty wastes?
Maybe they do, Pearson suggested uneasily. As you said, they're alien life forms. Maybe to them, Earth is nothing. Maybe they need totally different living conditions. Eyeing Jones intently, Kaminsky said,
Every life form has its own typical needs. What's a ruined waste to us is a fertile valley to something else, isn't that so?
Earth is the only fertile planet, Jones repeated with absolute conviction. They want Earth. That's what they're here for.
Silence. So that was it. There it stood, the terrifying specter they all dreaded. This was what they existed to destroy. This was what they had been set up to catch before it was too big to catch. It stood before them, sat, rather. Jones had again seated himself. Now he sat smoking jerkily, thin face distorted, a dark vein in his forehead pulsing. Behind his glasses, his furiously bright eyes had filmed over, cloudy with passion. Tangled hair, ragged black beard, a rumpled man with elongated arms, skinny legs, a man with infinite power, a man with infinite hatred.
You really hate them? Cusick said wonderingly.
Mutely, Jones nodded.
But you don't know anything about them, do you?
They're here, Jones said brittily. They're all around us, encircling us, closing in, can't you see their plans? Coming across space, century after century, working out their schemes, landing first on Pluto, on Mercury, coming closer all the time, nearer to the prize, setting up bases for attack.
Attack, Kaminsky repeated softly, cunningly. You know this? You have proof? Or is this just a wild idea?
6 months from this date, Jones stated, his voice pinched and metallic. The first Drifter will land on Earth.
Our Scots have landed on all the planets, Kaminsky pointed out,
but his silky assurance was gone. Does that mean we're invading them?
We're there, Jones said, because those planets are ours. We're looking them over.
Raising his eyes, he finished.
And that's what the drifters are doing. They're looking over Earth. Right now, they're looking us over. Can't you feel their eyes on us? Filthy, loathsome, alien insect eyes.
Horrified, Cusick said, "It's pathological."
Can you see this? Kaminsky pursued. I know it. But you see it? You see an invasion, destruction, drifters taking over Earth. Within a year, Jones stated, there'll be drifters landing everywhere, every day of the week. 10 here, 20 there. Hordes of them, all identical. Mindless hordes of filthy alien beings.
With an effort, Pearson said, sitting next to us in buses, I take it. Wanting to marry our daughters, right? Jones must have anticipated the remark. A second before Pearson spoke, the man's face went chalk white, and he gripped convulsively at the arms of his chair. Fighting with himself, struggling to keep control, he answered between his teeth,
"People aren't going to stand for it, friend. I can see that. There's going to be burnings. Those drifters are dry, friend. They burn well. There's going to be lots of cleaning up to do."
Kaminsky swore softly, furiously.
"Let me out of here," he began saying to nobody in particular. "I can't stand it."
"Take it easy," Pearson said sharply.
"No, I can't stand it."
Futilely, Kaminsky paced around in a circle.
"There's nothing we can do. We can't touch him. He really sees these things. He is safe from us, and he knows it."
It was early night. Cusick and Pearson stood together in the dark corridor of the top floor of the police offices. A few paces away, a dispatch carrier waited, his face bland beneath his steel helmet.
"Well," Pearson began. He shivered. "This hall is cold. Why don't you and your wife come over to my place for dinner? We can talk, sit around, discuss things."
Cusick said, "Thanks, I'd like to. You haven't met Nina.
I understand you were on leave, honeymoon?"
"Sort of. We've got a nice little place in Copenhagen. We had started painting it."
"How'd you find a place?"
"Nina's family put their shoulder to the wheel."
"Your wife's not in security, is she?"
"No, art and idealism."
"What'd she think about you being a cop?"
"She doesn't like it. She wonders if it's necessary, the new tyranny." Ironically, Cusick added, "After all, absolutists are dying out in a few more years."
"Do you think Hitler was a precog?" Pearson asked suddenly.
"Yes, I do. Not as developed as Jones, of course. Dreams, hunches, intuitions. The future was fixed for him, too, and he took long chances. I think Jones will begin taking long chances, too, now that he's beginning to understand what he's here on Earth for."
In Pearson's hand was a flat document. Idly, he tapped it against his fingers.
"You know what crazy notion entered my mind? I was going down there where they're holding him, down in that room. I was going to pry open his jaws and drop an A-pellet down his throat, blow his carcass to fragments. But then I got to thinking."
"He can't be killed," Cusick said.
"He can be killed, but he can't be taken by surprise. To kill Jones would mean bottling him up from all sides. He's got a 1-year jump on us. He'll die. He's mortal. Hitler died finally, but Hitler slithered away from a lot of bullets and poisons and bombs in his time. It'll take a closing ring to do it, a room with no doors. And you can tell by the look on his face that there's still a door."
He called the dispatch carrier over.
Deliver this personally. You know where. Down ramp at 45A. Where they've got that skinny, dried-up hick.
The carrier saluted, accepted the document, and trotted briskly off.
You think he believes all that? Pearson wondered. About the drifters?
We'll never know. He's got something big there. Naturally, they're going to land. They propel themselves randomly, don't they?
As a matter of fact, Pearson said, one has landed already.
Alive?
Dead. Research is working on it. Apparently the secret will stay kept until the next one.
Can they tell anything about it?
Quite a bit. It's a gigantic, single-celled organism using empty space as a culture medium. It drifts using some kind of vague propulsion mechanism. It's absolutely harmless. It's an amoeba. It's 20 feet wide. It's got some kind of tough rind to keep out the cold. This is no sinister invasion. These poor goddamn things just wander mindlessly around.
What do they eat?
They don't. They just go on until they die. There's no feeding mechanism, no digestive process, no excretion, no reproductive apparatus. They're incomplete.
Odd.
Apparently, we've run into a swarm of them. Sure, they've started falling. They'll hit here and there, burst apart, smack into cars, flatten themselves out in fields, foul up lakes and streams. They'll be a pest. They'll stink and flop. More likely just lie quietly dying, baking away in the sun. Heat killed this one, baked it to a crisp. And meanwhile, people will have something to think about.
Especially when Jones gets started.
If it wasn't Jones, it'd be somebody else. But Jones has that talent, that advantage. He can call the shots.
That document was his release papers, wasn't it?
That's right, Pearson said. He's free. Until we can think up a new law, he's a free man. To do as he pleases.